I think we're live. We're live.
On location, believe it or not,
in
the big city of downtown Valparaiso.
That's our backdrop. The big city is our
looks
backdrop.
Like it could be in Chicago based on the way this is looking. But
you know, Valpo prints of itself as Chicago.
It's a mini Chicago.
It's a mini city.
But we are CCSK Law, and we're coming here from the poorhouse here in Valparaiso.
The what?
Poorhouse.
It's called the P-O-U-R, as in pour me a drink.
As in pouring the drink. Yeah.
Better play on words. They've left themselves some room to decorate.
Massive brick wall. We can put our poster there.
Right. There we go, CCSK Law.
Oh, I like it.
When did they open?
A few weeks ago?
Yeah. I think it's new.
Yeah, it's pretty new.
Yeah, they haven't been open
it's
terribly
along
long.
The lines of, you might remember the past episode when we were at Elements.
Yeah.
And they have, it's the same
like
kind of thing.
For beer, right?
Yeah, but this is for beer.
Yeah, so
you got to get here late. So
pay by the ounce.
And here's the interesting thing is that a lot of times these places don't have regular beer. They have only fancy stuff, but they have regular beer.
They do.
Yeah.
They do, but they got the main beer stuff, but they also have a whole lot of craft.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, yeah, this stout is delicious. This is a breakfast stout. It's Founder's breakfast stout.
It's like eggs and
for breakfast, and he's like, "You're having it for breakfast."
Yeah, I will have some of this tomorrow.
It's
I know
nice
they open at 4 p.m., but this time.
Well, as long as
you just take a bar, take a glass home with you.
If you text that you're having breakfast, but it's at 9 p.m. instead of 9 o'clock in the morning. So you like to text like.
Well, based on my text.
Apparently so. Yeah, my text.
What was that?
How long did it take you?
13 hours.
I sent that.
But did you say it didn't get there, or
I didn't get it either.
No.
I sent it in the morning. A couple minutes after you had said that you were going to be there.
Oh, you? So my text got there at 8:20.
Yeah.
I responded right away.
I didn't get it either.
You didn't get mine either?
No.
Oh,
I didn't get yours.
No, I didn't get it.
I didn't get yours.
I didn't get yours until after Isaac's.
Anyway,
technology gone crazy.
Anyway, on the cell phone.
We pride ourselves on knowing technology.
Right. We have to be held to a certain level of confidence in technology.
So this is understood. If you didn't get those response or call from us, it's because the technology didn't work.
There we go. Yep. Well, we do our best to respond as much as we can. But
we do.
We have 12 different numbers, so one of them will work.
Could do. I just got a new number again on
Did
Google
you?
Voice because I'm doing some Google Ads, and so I can track what comes in.
Oh,
there.
Nice.
Because our original number was from Google Voice, and we transported that over to the Ruby service. And then,
yep.
So I figured, I'm afraid I'd get a new number so that I can track what comes in off of my.
There you go.
Google.
So y'all need to check yourselves in because I can't tag you.
Oh, we got to check in. Oh,
okay. I'm going to do that. You know, actually, I want to do it anyway because I want to see if we can actually hear ourselves.
It's
a little bit noisier than what we're normally used to do. There we are.
We're talking about technology and now we're like technology.
Jesus, while we ignore you out there, take care of us.
Can you hear us over
the
noise? Really well, yeah. Hey, we've got 4 people watching.
All of us. So, I don't know if anybody already had a topic to touch on. I had an interesting experience happen for the third time now.
What's
and
that? I'm going to turn the volume down so I can hear you talk.
Okay.
I don't either.
I'm just saying we're live.
If you just...
I'm just kind of like
check in, right? Like, probably wouldn't it?
Oh, do I check in?
I don't know.
Check in.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Terminology.
Like
things.
It?
I like it.
Yeah, maybe you'll like it.
I liked it. There we go. I'm going to comment that we're loving it.
Well, you joined, and Kurt joined. Okay. How did you join?
We can share.
Somebody did it from the
website. Oh, share. I like that. That's good.
Yeah, I shared it.
So,
no technology.
Yep.
Working with the client, and this has happened now. This is the third time I've been involved in one of these situations where someone passes away and they have a divorce pending.
Oh.
And one would think that a pending divorce would somehow have an effect on the law.
Right.
But it's not. It doesn't. So in this situation, though the divorce decree was written, it was not submitted, filed, approved by the court. And so
they were still married.
They were still married.
Still
they could
married.
Still they could still back out of it.
Right. But the
somehow I don't see that happening.
So the real problem that I have with it and I'm reading the law and if you read the law, it's funny, I had a teacher one time say, go read the law and you'll figure it out. I'm like, Now, I discovered that's not the case.
No.
Because the application of the law is an interpretive thing. So there is a statute in the law that says if your spouse abandons you, you, even if you're not divorced, you, that person loses the ability to make a claim against your estate.
Yeah.
So there's rules out there called spousal spousal claims. It's statutory spousal allowance.
Doesn't that have a time element to it?
90 days from the point of this, from the probate filing. So, but the reality is,
it sounds like that's the answer. Which is, but it, there's more.
But it's not. So abandonment means that there wasn't a mutual agreement that the person's leaving. So if you, if two people are like, well, you get the heck out of here. No, I'll leave whatever. That's a mutual,
mutual
agreement that one's leaving.
Filing for divorce.
So that's not abandonment. And the other, there's another statute caveat in the law that says if the person moves out, leaves, actually uses the term left, and then committed adultery, which they define as living with another person.
Living?
Living with another person.
Both, you have to leave and live with another person?
But now leave also means abandonment. The courts have interpreted leave as abandonment. So now you have to leave without the other person's mutual agreement if you're leaving and live with someone. If those two thresholds aren't met, here's the situation that occurs. The person basically tried to, well, if you were divorced, you wouldn't have any claim to the person's estate.
Sure.
If you're married and it's a first marriage, the surviving spouse can claim 50% of your estate as though you were still. So in this situation, that was not this person's wish. But she died, the divorce wasn't finalized, and now this person can come back and claim 50% of the estate.
Who filed the divorce?
I don't know, I'm still looking for the paperwork.
Because I will bet you, you could argue if the deceased person is the party that filed the divorce, that there's not, and there, because it didn't finalize, there wouldn't, you could argue there's not a mutual agreement there that the, she was filing on her own behalf.
Yeah, it looks like if the divorce isn't finalized in Indiana, they don't recognize it. There's a real, you have to be like, well, it was in the court and just wasn't finished or whatever it might be.
So you're saying it wasn't in the court at all, but the petition was just filed.
Oh, they were well down the road. This was the final decree that was getting ready to be filed.
Okay.
Final.
Just hadn't
but it hadn't been.
Yep.
So it's kind of shocking.
Days. And
so we've
60
seen.
60 days after you file 60 divorce
days.
And then you would file the decree? Yeah.
So, the divorce had actually started a year prior.
Oh, wow. So it was a little contested.
Kind of took a while to get done. But I had another situation where there was a similar situation in that there's also a thing called spousal allowance where the spouse can take $25,000 over and above the 50% if it's a first marriage. And a second marriage, those numbers drop, but they still are a priority distribution. So we had a spouse that had sort of, I guess not officially abandoned the person, but when the person died, the spouse kind of took everything, and then the daughter came in to take care of final expenses, funeral, and all that. So there's no money left in the estate to pay for that.
Wow.
And though, again, the divorce had not been finalized. Well, the divorce hadn't been finalized.
Yeah.
So
everything, the daughter's entitled to some of that if there's anything.
Well, but if when you do the math, $25,000 and a portion of it pretty much took what was left. So daughter was out of pocket, all those expenses, and unable to be reimbursed. And again, same thing. Divorce decree had been written, not finalized.
And that's the dad of the daughter?
And this was the dad of the daughter that died. Not to make light of the situation, but that was kind of an interesting alliteration. But yeah, so it's one of those things in law where it just doesn't seem right, doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And yet,
it would be one of those things that you can challenge, but it'd be expensive to do.
Well, and there's no precedent. So I went and read three cases, and they all just keep pointing. I mean, they point back to the 1800s.
Oh.
This is like real super old law, so you're not going to get the court to go, you know what, I think you're right. We're going to reverse, you know, 100 some years of precedent. But what's going to have to happen is the law is going to have to actually be rewritten. And from my perspective, if you look at it, if someone leaves and they're living with somebody else, if the leaving was mutual, it doesn't seem that that would matter. well, that you would think that would be enough to terminate the ability to come back to killing.
But you know what, though? I've seen it time and again where people separate, they get or go through the divorce process, they spend a year doing it, and then they change their mind and get back together. And that happens a lot.
And that's so I think that's where the court's leaning towards.
It's, you know, it's a lot like with the parental rights, where the court leans towards maintaining the parental rights.
Yeah,
amongst everything, they really, really work to keep those involved. And marriage, it sounds like they're doing kind of the same thing. But yeah, I've seen a lot of that where though.
So I was trying to come up with a strategy. How do you defeat this? And it's, you'd almost have to give everything away before you die. But if you didn't know you were going to die.
Oh, yeah, right. That's tough.
I mean, if you had stuff in trust and changed the beneficiaries. And
well, but trust doesn't protect because it's still part of your estate. But if I literally gifted, let's say this person had quick claim deeded a property to a family member and then died. It's not part of your estate because it's gone.
Yeah.
It had to be recorded. You'd have to record the deed.
You have to do it fully, record it, and take care of it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think you'd literally have to change title on assets so that they wouldn't be countable in your probatable estate or in your trust because otherwise they're there. So that would be like the only way to do it.
Know you're gonna die.
Right. Exactly. And
yeah, so that's
and then you're but then you're out all that stuff too, because if you gift it you have to give up all control. Right. So it's a weird sort of game that you're playing.
POD and TOD, that type of thing.
It would still been well, it has to be recorded. So it'd be similar. You have to have it recorded before you die. It depends. The $25,000 allowance can come back and make a claim against you. Yeah, you'd have to do something pretty dramatic. It was a very, very hard thing to discover. And then spend time researching. And
what happens to the divorce when someone dies? It's just, I mean,
done.
Till death do us part.
Basically moot. Oh, that was the term the court used. It was moot. So they, because they had to file, it was in the middle of a post-status hearing waiting for the final
word.
For
the people out there anticipating divorce, there is a law in Indiana that if you kill your spouse or someone, you cannot benefit from their
estate.
Right,
yeah.
So just so you know.
Just to
don't play that card.
Put that out there. Don't murder. Well, let's make this a little more broad. Don't There's a law out there that says you shouldn't murder people.
Right, yeah.
We advise you to
either way.
Yeah.
Regardless of your means.
But as it pertains to this particular conversation, there's other reasons not to murder people.
We'll put the caveat out
there. That one, that's a good next step on don't murder people. And even
so
if you do, there's
even more. Man, somebody's going to read this wrong. Yeah, I was going to listen to that wrong. You got to make sure you get that out.
The divorce is moot. You're still going to jail and getting nothing from this spouse.
Right.
I mean, that's
pretty much
from prison. Cool. Yeah. Anyway, if you've murdered someone, Kurt is our criminal attorney.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my fun of reading. We all love reading the law and cases.
Oh yeah, we do.
So that was my yesterday.
Nice.
Reading the statute and trying to read it. And then I guess what was interesting to me was reading the cases and knowing what the statute said and seeing how the court interpreted it. The clear use of the term abandonment in that one statute makes total sense. If it's abandonment and it had to be like the person got up in the middle of the night and just skipped town.
Yeah.
Don't know what happened to him, didn't have anything to do about it, didn't have any say in it. Versus the other statute that just says left and went to live with someone else.
Yeah.
So then they have married, left, and abandoned. So I don't know how you can leave and not abandon, I would think, but I guess our courts don't think so.
That's the law in a nutshell, right?
Yeah.
That's
right?
Yeah,
that's why we have jobs, right?
Yeah.
That's
why we have jobs.
Interpreting the statutes. That's what we do.
But anyway, so that was fun with law.
I had a pretty good, always, I come across this issue so much, the butting of heads of employment versus independent contractor, right? Now, in this case,
every time you bring the subject up, I run the risk of having, like, a seizure because that was on my bar exam.
That was on your bar exam, yeah. Bad memories, he's having flashbacks, post-traumatic stress syndrome. PTSD from the bar exam.
It's trigger.
I'm going to step aside and let you tell this story. Here's the card right there. Here, take the card.
They
give you this nifty little card, and you go up there, and you can pour, and it puts it all in there, then you pay at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. So you put the card into the thing, and then you pour. Yeah.
Okay.
There's the directions are actually on the back of the card, too.
From the right spout.
Yeah. Follow the numbers. Follow the numbers.
So RG doesn't have those terrible flashbacks.
All right, so a lot of employers the way you're probably feeling right now, health insurance, right?
Good topic.
Yeah, right.
So tough topic.
So
we gotta bring my wife in here. She works with health insurance.
Oh, there
so
we go.
We should bring her in just to talk about it.
Yeah,
I'm talking how she's confusing
with
it is.
Source insurance in Maryville. Yeah,
man, and it's
very very confusing.
Incredibly confusing, and rates just keep, as everybody knows, rates continue to go up. And so it's a big incentive for employers to think, wow, I want you to be an independent contractor. And so,
But do you? That's the question.
Well, in this instance, it was, they were clearly employees, and they actually had employment agreements. And really, the focus of that, it was pretty clear cut. He wanted to move them over. He kept trying to slowly shift things over, though, and not respecting the employment agreement. So he tried to shift them over to independent contractor instead. But there's even a non-compete in there. So even if they pushed him over to independent contractor, you're technically still in violation of your employment agreement because now you're competing against your own employment agreement, being an independent contractor. So you have to void that out. You have to do what? So what I'm writing for them is we're going to make it a clear-cut thing. We're going to get rid of the employment agreement, and they're going to come in with their own LLC as an independent contractor, right? So we're going to form their own company, and they're going to be hired as an independent contractor from their previous employer. But we're going to do a mutual and joint release where the employer will not sue the employee for any breach for the breach of the contract for the non-compete violation. And the employee is not going to sue the employer for slowly trying to move them over to the independent contractor status, right? Yeah. So the little breaches that are happening.
Are you guys still talking about it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
We're going to sit on the periphery. We're talking about non-competes.
Non-competes, how they apply, as well as so I was saying that the huge incentive for this is the employer is getting this feeling the stress of the health insurance. And so wanting to move these employees over more to an independent contractor status.
Yep.
How do you go about that?
Right.
And we're talking about if you start treating somebody as an independent contractor, but that old employment agreement is still there, you're technically in violation of your own non-compete agreement. That would be in that employment. So you've got to void out that employment agreement through what I said I was creating, joint and mutual release, where the employer is not going to hold it against the employee for any non-compete. But then because he was slowly switching them over, technically he was breaching some of his own employment agreement.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's better. And in Indiana, it's real easy to get out of that because most agreements should be written in a manner that it is employment at will.
Right.
Unless your contract specifically lays out that you are terminated for a particular cause, you're assumed to be employed at will. You can just leave the job, and the employer can just ask you to leave the job. And that right there is enough that to really sever that off, but you still trigger the non-compete that's most likely in there that says you cannot compete within this particular area for this amount of time in the same industry. So hiring you back on as the independent contractor would be a problem. So that's where you need that joint and mutual release or some kind of release to say, okay, we're not going to hold this employment agreement. We're voiding that and the non-compete.
Would that non-compete fit? I mean, I don't know that because if you're doing the work for the same employer.
It would only become an issue if the employer tried to enforce it.
Right? Well, if the employer tried to enforce it. But that's leverage that employer can always hold over that independent contractor.
But is it really leverage?
You're right. It's going to be tough to bring that in court and say you're violating that. But if that independent contractor maybe did take on some other side work, I mean that would.
Well,
be
that's the thing. That's the benefit is for the independent contractors.
Yes.
Is that now they can do work for this guy, that guy, the other guy, and they can start their own individual companies and do whatever they want.
Which would be in violation of that non-compete.
Would have been, but now it won't be.
But if you treat that independent contractor saying no, you still have to exclusively work for me.
No, it's
now you're not an independent contractor. That's employment. Yeah. And you're going to come back. The IRS can come back and say, you know what? You got to be paying taxes on them. And then employer will be hit with a penalty on that.
You know, there's a weird ruling that came out of one of our courts up the line where independent contractors, you would think, people that drive trailers, you know, like they haul trailers, so you get a team of people and they're going to drive three or four trailers to a dealer. You know, they're coming out of Elkhart.
Sure.
They're driving to, what's that? RV place over on 30, whatever it is. You know, the happy RV place.
RV land,
right? Camp land or whatever.
Camp land.
So you get like four or five guys and gals driving these things or hauling them with their trucks or whatever. There was a ruling that came down that something that would have seemed like it had to have been employer related, they actually jumped over and said they were responsible. I'm trying to remember if it was for unemployment. Maybe they had to file unemployment.
Oh, yeah.
During that period of time. So the IRS is trying to close that gap. Yeah. And it appears more and more Indiana seems to be leaning more towards seeing it as an employee relationship, and you really have to stay on that side of the fence.
And so I think you're hitting on some important parts. Who's making all these rules? Where are these rules coming from that makes these restrictions? Well, one part is the state, particularly for like unemployment. Right? A lot of these issues get drawn out when somebody thinks they're an employee, but actually the employer thinks they're an independent contractor, and then they get fired, and then they go to do unemployment, and suddenly the issue's drawn out. The other side to that is IRS, right? IRS is supposed to, you're supposed to withhold taxes if you're an employee. If you're not an employee, then the employer, then the person paying you doesn't have to withhold any taxes from you. So the IRS will have a certain factor system. Now, Indiana may be trying to make an effort to make that distinction very clear, but the IRS never will. Because as soon as you, and this happens in all areas of IRS, that they can, where IRS will not make a bright line rule, because anytime that you do, attorneys will find loopholes and ways around it. So they leave it gray with like a 20-factor test. And so this factor test to be able to determine, do we believe in this case-by-case instance, is this an employee or is this an independent contractor? And they can hold it on a case-by-case basis.
I'll tell you, it's not as clear-cut as people think. I remember I worked for a company years ago, and they shall remain nameless. But it was interesting because as a sales rep for them, we were selling a product. They made us, in 30 days when you hired on, to form your own company. And then they paid your company, and your company paid them. Or your company worked for them, and they paid your company, right? We weren't allowed to work. They verbally were like, you know, you're not allowed to work for other companies, or we'll throw it out. They gave us the samples. They said, this is how you're going to present it. They said, you're going to be at appointments on this time. We're going to give you the appointments or not.
And the IRS
investigated them, and they are still doing business that way, and they have not been labeled independent contractors or employees. They're all employees. Wow. Can't believe it. Actually, after I left there, it was interesting. I got a call from the state where I was at because they were investigating about that. Apparently, somebody had put in.
Yeah,
and I explained to them, I said, you know, so this is how it works. And this is what it is. And no, you can't. We actually had one guy that had worked for us that. He had his appointments,
yep,
and he taught his wife how to do it, and he was taking as many appointments as good, so he sent his wife out.
Yep.
To run it. And they fired him because they said, we're not having your wife, you're doing this. You're not allowed to have other people work.
Wow, that doesn't sound like you're running your own business.
It doesn't, but somehow, and I don't know how, for the life of me, I don't know how they've been able to find it and stay away from it, but they've never been able to get a friend on them as employers.
Oh, man.
I don't know. It blows my mind, but it's one that, ever since I've been in law school, I've been like, I really want to find out how that's still happening.
Maybe they're just not very good attorneys, or maybe they're completely unrepresented. And like in terms of the people representing the...
I don't know. It's the government's looked into them, and the attorney general is once they've looked into them. And that's who called me.
Well,
and they never did anything about it. Wow. So, I don't know. And I think what it is, it has to do with the fact that they're doing the business hiring thing, and there's nothing that's quite so concrete as you can't do that. It's just we're not going to keep giving you leads and doing business for you.
Well, if you're hiring a business, I mean, they should be independent contractors unless you have like a joint venture with or a strategic alliance or something.
Independent contractors, But that's part of what they're doing, is by making them a business and offering apparently a lot of protection in that realm. I don't know.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what the agreement is, the independent contractor agreement between them. If it's something like a strategic alliance, that's kind of the next level in a relationship between two businesses. That's where you're more exclusively dating on certain things.
Yeah, I don't remember. But I remember asking my wife if we could enter a strategic alliance. Gave her a little necklace.
You want to go steady? Yeah.
You're steady, and then you're
open steady. Alliances are big yeah. for us to open.
Those are being the seven.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like you've made a solution for probably a smaller owned company. Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For this is a pretty. Business. Yeah. This is a smaller business, and I was actually talking with the employees rather than the employer.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, I work with the employer, but in this case, because they're setting up their own entities, they came to me to help set up own entities to become the independent contractors with their own entity. If you're ever an independent contractor. If you're working on your own, you are a sole proprietor. If you want limited liability, you got to file that with the state for limited liability company or a corporation so that you can be hired as an independent contractor in your entity rather than personally, which will provide you with that limited liability where your personal assets then are not at risk, such as your like house, car, Beanie Baby collection. All that stuff can be protected because you have an LLC or a corporation.
I do remember they had people, you had to do either a corp or an S corp. You couldn't do a partnership or limited liability or anything like that.
There's limited partnership.
That was in their, no, I'm saying that was in their in their agreement.
You had to have a corp or an S corp?
You had to have a corp or an S corp. That was the requirement, one of the requirements before the LLCs really kind of became in vogue.
That was like, that was 1980s.
Because I had an LLC before that, and I was trying to do that. And they said you can't do it. It's got to be a corporation or a
interest. Maybe just because they weren't set up to deal with them. I don't know.
Seems sketchy to me.
That does seem sketchy.
Anybody up for a lawsuit? We can find people that.
People who have been wronged. Justice.
It's 7 o'clock.
It's 7 o'clock.
It's time already. Zips through, man. Definitely come down and check out this place, Poor House.
Poor House.
I don't know. I don't know if I like the name.
The Poor House.
I mean, I get
every
it.
Time I say it, somebody's like,
Poor House.
Valparaiso has a Poor House.
The connotation there's.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, it is pretty cool.
And they have shuffleboard.
And the beer's good. Oh.
Shuffleboard.
I haven't seen shuffleboard in a while. I like that.
Shuffleboard. Yeah.
It's a table.
Oh. Table.
They used to, when I was growing up, they used to go to the American Legion all the time, and they used to have it there.
Nice.
So I used to play as a kid all the time because kids are bored in that environment.
And people can bring their own food, though. So.
Yeah, I can smell the Chinese food.
Oh, I can smell the Chinese food the entire time.
Yeah.
My wife made tacos tonight, so I'm excited to get home.
Taco Tuesday.
Nice. Taco Tuesday.
Very excited.
You can visit our website, ccsklaw.com. Call us. We have many phone numbers.
You're right. We do. We'll be happy to help you out.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you next week.
Have a great evening. Okay, see what I have to hit here.